The following program contains graphic material, including offensive language. Viewer discretion is advised.
Without freedom of the press, no democratic form of government could exist.
We switch you now to London.
I'm standing on a rooftop looking out over London.
Good night and good luck.
Good evening from our CBS newsroom in New York.
NBC presents Chet Huntley and David Brinkley.
From ABC, this is World News Tonight with Peter Jennings in London, Max Robinson in Chicago, and from our desk in Washington, Frank Reynolds.
Good evening.
This historic legislation, the telecommunications law, will create many, many high wage jobs, will create opportunity and better lives for all Americans.
When the press is free, the people of a country are free. When the press is not free, the people of a country are in danger of slavery.
Keeping you informed with information, news, and the views of people making the news. It's the Nicole Sandler Show on NicoleSandler.com and the Progressive Voices Network.
Mr. President, will you give an apology for the statement yesterday?
Mr. President, did you refer to African nations? You
refer to Mr. President, are you a racist? Mr. President, will you respond to these serious questions about your statement, sir?
No, Mr. President, I answer with love.
I'm talking to the President, not you, sir. Mr. President, are you a racist?
Those are reporters shouting out questions to the President after his proclamation signing, I guess it was a ceremony today at the White House, honoring Martin Luther King Jr., of all people, Donald Trump, the day after he calls Haiti and El Salvador and African nations shithole countries. He goes on to honor Martin Luther King Jr. If anyone doesn't see the irony there, then I've got an Alanis Morissette record for you. Unbelievable. So the president, in all his wisdom, and I say that with dripping sarcasm, decides that these nations are shitholes. Places he's never been, by the way, filled with people that he's not taken the time to get to know. And demands to know why we don't have more people coming here from Norway. He actually did. He really wanted to know why don't we have more Norwegians trying to emigrate to the United States? Well, Damon Silvers of the AFL-CIO tweeted out, "Why do Norwegians stay home? Norway has single-payer health care, paid sick leave, strong unions, and world-class infrastructure." More people want to leave here to go to Norway than the other way around. Norway kind of cold, but I'd brave the cold weather and go there if I could. Knowing what this country has devolved to, you want to talk about a shithole nation. When we have somebody like Donald Trump as the leader of the country, I think we know what the definition of a shithole nation is. Now, last night, the White House wasn't disputing the fact that he said it. Nope, not at all. Although today he tweeted out a denial, because the man lies as easily as he breathes. Probably easier than he breathes. We'll find out how easily he breathes, I guess, soon enough on Tuesday, because today he's having a physical at Walter Reed. And then after his physical, which will take roughly 3 hours, he'll head down here to Florida, where, by the way, it's going to be chilly this weekend, Donald. You might not be able to play golf in your little golf shorts. Florida, where he should go to retire. But I digress. Dick Durbin was the only Democrat in the room yesterday when Donald Trump made his statement. And he made a rather lengthy statement. Well, it's about 3 minutes long that I'm going to play for you, because some of his colleagues are now not denying that Trump said it. They're just saying they don't recall the word shithole being used. Well, Dick Durbin said not only did he use it, he did it numerous times.
The president interrupted him several times with questions, and in the course of his comments, said things which were hate-filled, vile, and racist. He used those words advisedly. I understand how powerful they are. But I cannot believe that in the history of the White House, in that Oval Office, any president has ever spoken the words that I personally heard our president speak yesterday. You've seen the comments in the press. I have not read one of them that's inaccurate. To no surprise, the president started tweeting this morning denying that he used those words. It is not true. He said these hate-filled things, and he said them repeatedly. When the question was raised about Haitians, for example, we have a group that have temporary protected status in the United States because they were the victims of crises and disasters and political upheaval. The largest group is El Salvador, the second is Honduran, and the third is Haitian. And when I mentioned that fact to him, he said, Haitians, do we need more Haitians? And then he went on, when we started to describe the immigration from Africa that was being protected in this bipartisan measure, that's when he used these vile and vulgar comments, calling the nations they come from shitholes.
Shitholes.
The exact word used by the president, not just once, but repeatedly.
Repeatedly.
That was the nature of this conversation. When it came to the issue of, quote, chain migration, I said to the president, do you realize how painful that term is to so many people? African Americans believe that they migrated to America in chains. And when you speak about chain migration, it hurts them personally. And he said, oh, that's a good line.
Good line.
And then when I talked to him about the impact this has on family unification in a nation that values families with the flag as the most important symbols of our future, they scoffed at this notion. It was a heartbreaking moment. But I will tell you this, I'm not going to quit. I have a singular mission, and the mission is this, to give these dreamers and as many members of their families as possible a chance to be part of America's future in a legal status. I am convinced that there's a majority in both the House and the Senate of Democrats and Republicans who support that concept. I know there's an overwhelming majority of Americans who support that concept. So here's what we're going to do. We're going to prepare our bipartisan agreement for introduction into the Senate next week.
Good.
If the Republican leadership has a better alternative, bring it forward. If they don't, for goodness sakes, give us a vote. I'll be on the phone today with my Republican colleagues and my Democratic colleagues, begging them to support this measure. Time is running out. We have to get this done. My thought that we might get a bipartisan agreement approved by the White House died yesterday. We have to do this and show leadership in Congress to solve this important challenge.
So there's Dick Durbin going into great detail about what he heard with his own ears, the president of the United States say. Now, look, I've got a potty mouth. It's why I run a disclaimer at the beginning of the show. I use language every now and then. I'm not the president. Sitting in the Oval Office, talking with U.S. senators, talking about other nations, you don't use language like that. You don't demean peoples of the world like that. But the really chicken shit part is on the part of the other senators who won't confirm what was said. Lindsey Graham apparently said something, spoke up to Trump and told him, we don't know exactly what he told him now, do we? But he issued a statement. Here's the statement that he made. Yesterday, Senator Durbin and I met with President Dump at the White House to discuss our bipartisan proposal on border security and immigration. Following comments by the president, I said my piece directly to him. The president and all those attending the meeting know what I said and how I feel. I've always believed that America is an idea not defined by its people, but by its ideals. The American ideal is embraced by people all over the globe. Maybe it used to be. I don't think it is anymore. It was best said a long time ago, e pluribus unum, out of many one. Diversity has always been our strength, not our weakness. In reforming immigration, we cannot lose those American ideals. And it goes on like that. That's as much as he references what Trump said. And I guess that's better than his colleagues, Tom Cotton and David Perdue, who say they don't recall the word being used. Now, notice they didn't say he didn't say it. They just don't recall it. These people are taking their lying cues from the president, and it's frankly just truly sickening. Yeah, as Emma Heidi said in the chat room, not my president. You know, he's not mine either, and I constantly feel this this urge to get on Twitter and apologize to the rest of the world, saying he does not speak for all of us. But you know what? Sadly, he does, because he's the president, because he won in the Electoral College, a system that we need to fix in this country, even though the reason it exists was to prevent a disaster such as Donald Trump being made president. All right. Coming up on the show today, you know, the solution to this is to vote him out, vote out all the bums, change the makeup of Congress in November, and via the primaries between now and then, get the most progressive candidates we can possibly get as Democrats. That's why you've got to be registered as a Democrat so you can vote in the primaries. And then vote out the bigots, the haters, the Republicans in November. And then in 2020, we vote in somebody else. Is it going to be a perfect candidate? Hell no. We haven't had a perfect president in my lifetime, and I'm kind of old. But we can do a hell of a lot better than Donald Trump. But there's a problem with our voting system. That's why our guest today is Greg Palast. He'll join us at the bottom of the hour. We'll check in, I think, today with Luke Vargas of Talk Media News after we take a listen to What's News.
I read the news today, oh boy.
It's time for Nicole Sandler's What's News from NicoleSandler.com and the Progressive Voices Network.
Sometimes the news is so offensive, it's easier to let someone else tell you what happened.
I'm Joy Reid. Now, I happen to be an American citizen. I was born in Brooklyn, New York, and raised in Denver, Colorado. But my parents were immigrants. My mom, who was a college professor, was born in British Guyana. And my father, who was a geologist, was born in the Democratic Republic of Congo. Two people who immigrated from those countries, from countries located in South America, just off the Caribbean, and from Africa. Parts of the world that presumably, according to the President of the United States, you will find shithole countries from which the United States should not accept immigrants. Tonight, the breaking news out of Washington, D.C. should come as no surprise to any American, but it should be embarrassing to every American. This afternoon, the man who was elevated to the presidency of the United States, Trump, who was sued by the Nixon administration in the 1970s for refusing to rent apartments to African Americans, who rose to political prominence by questioning whether the first black president was really an American, who kicked off his campaign by calling Mexicans rapists, and who, as president, said that there were good people among the Nazis who marched in Charlottesville and who killed a woman by ramming her with their car. That man, Donald Trump, during a meeting in the Oval Office inside the White House, did the least surprising thing of his presidency today. Both NBC News, which cites a Democratic aide, and The Washington Post, which broke the story and has two sources, report that Trump became frustrated when lawmakers proposed reinstating protections for immigrants from Haiti and from African countries as part of a bipartisan immigration deal. The Post reports that El Salvador was also among the nations mentioned. The Trump administration had moved in recent months to end such protections. After lawmakers made their proposal, the Post reported Trump said, "Why are we having all these people from shithole countries come here?" Then added that the U.S. should have more people from places like Norway. "Why do we need more Haitians?" Trump said, the Post reports, citing people familiar with the meeting. "Take them out." Later, the White House didn't even pretend Trump didn't say it. Its response to the reports reads in part, "Certain Washington politicians choose to fight for foreign countries, but President Trump will always fight for the American people." It should also not surprise you at this point that this is reportedly not the first time Donald Trump has uttered these kinds of comments. During a discussion on immigration in December, the New York Times reported that Trump slurred Haitians, saying they, quote, all have AIDS. And that once Nigerians, whose country of 186 million people has lots and lots and lots of big cities, that once they had seen the shiny, gleamy United States, they would never, quote, go back to their huts in Africa.
By Thursday night, no one in the Trump administration denied the language. Late night had a field day.
"Guys, I don't know how to break this to you, but I think the president might be racist." "No, no, wait, wait, hear me out. I know I sound crazy. I know I sound crazy. And you know what? Personally, as someone from South Shithole, I'm offended, Mr. President. Okay, I'm offended. It was like yesterday when Trump met with the Prime Minister of Norway. He was like, 'What do you guys do with your black people?' And she was like, 'Oh, we don't have any.' He was like, 'Wow.'"
Hey, today, he returned to the same unstable, reactionary president we've all come to know and know.
Wow.
Sir, they're not whole countries. For one, Donald Trump isn't their president.
And I'm sure the fact that countries he described as holes are mostly populated by people of color and the immigrants he wants from Norway are not is a coincidence. Because if it wasn't, it would mean we voted for a racist, like a real one, and we'd have to get pitchforks and chase him out of the White House. But I also assume the White House would deny he said that. They did not. They just tried to spin it. It really is unfathomable. You just can't believe that this is the guy running our country.
But Friday morning, Trump tweeted, "The language used by me at the DACA meeting was tough, but this was not the language used. What was really tough was the outlandish proposal made a big setback for DACA." He later added another tweet, "Never said anything derogatory about Haitians other than Haiti is obviously a very poor and troubled country. Never said take them out, made up by Dems. I have a wonderful relationship with Haitians. Probably should record future meetings. Unfortunately, no trust." Trump has canceled his trip to London, saying it's because he is, quote, not a big fan of the Obama administration having sold perhaps the best located and finest embassy in London for peanuts, only to build a new one in an off location for $1.2 billion. Bad deal. Wanted me to cut ribbon. No, end quote. The decision was not, in fact, made by the Obama administration, but was made by George W. Bush in October of 2008. And it was made for security reasons. The U.S. embassy could not be altered to meet security needs. The British media is reporting the trip's cancellation may have been because the White House feared protests. In an interview with the Wall Street Journal, Trump said that he thought he probably had a, quote, very good relationship with Kim Jong-un of North Korea. Asked if he had ever spoken with him, Trump said, quote, "I don't want to comment on it. I don't want to comment. I'm not saying I have or I haven't." I got the news. And that's a bit of what's news for now. I'm Nicole Sandler. If you appreciate these reports and the Nicole Sandler Show, I hope you'll consider a contribution. My work is 100% listener funded, and I can't do it without you. Find out more at NicoleSandler.com/donate. All right. For a bit more of what's going on in the news, we turn to our friends at the Talk Media News Service. They're at TalkMediaNews.com. On the line today, is that Luke Vargas?
It is. Good afternoon, Nicole.
Hey, Luke. How are you doing?
I'm doing well. It's nice to be here surrounded by the representatives of many other countries that don't use horrible insults to insult each other.
I'll bet. Are you over at
I've fled the United States to international territory just by going to work. It's kind of a privilege.
So you're at the UN today, where I imagine I have a statement that I could share from the UN human rights spokesman Rupert Colville, I think is his name.
The spokesperson, yes,
spokesperson, and he flat out called the president of the United States racist. Because what else can you call him?
Yeah, no, I actually really like the UN human rights chief. He has been injecting himself into a lot of political fights with the United States, to be completely honest. And unfortunately, he is resigning this year, basically saying that it was impossible for him to keep doing this kind of work, which is regrettable. I mean, I feel like he's a Jordanian prince. He's has no reason to have this job other than for trying to leave a mark, you know, on the world. He's not in this for the money or, you know, the title. He's got all that locked up. And I always find it refreshing when he speaks his mind. And I was not surprised to see that statement come out from him today. We're also hearing that there was a meeting of African ambassadors at the United Nations this morning, because as you've probably covered this already, but with time, we've learned that the S-hole comment was not directed specifically at Haiti, but at African countries in general that were, you know, having people immigrate to the United States. So this group of African ambassadors at the United Nations met this morning to discuss President Trump's remarks. And now my colleague at Al Jazeera has reported that a second emergency meeting of the African group of UN ambassadors is going to meet this afternoon, and they're going to discuss issuing a formal statement on behalf of the continent or some.
Wow.
I'm not really sure where this goes, but this is obviously language that has caught the attention of the UN, rightfully so, I think.
Definitely rightfully so. I'm guessing that nothing like this has ever happened before.
No, and you see press outlets that operate in this building and that report news of the United States to the world struggling to be able to even relay this kind of message from President Trump to their own domestic audiences. A colleague of mine who works in the Japanese press here went and looked at the way three Japanese newspapers had been reporting President Trump's comments, and they didn't do a direct translation, but the three, so the Asahi, which is a big newspaper in Japan, said President Trump called these restroom-like countries. Reuters in Japan said unsanitary nations, and the Nikkei, which is another large daily newspaper, said countries not fit to be fertilizer. So again, we have transcended normal diplomatic speak and crossed into an area where both American news outlets, including ours, Talk Media News, is in a sort of a bind. We have, you know, some clients like you who, you know, have pretty loose, as far as I understand it, you know, sort of rules as it comes to what kind of language you can use on air. But we have other syndicates who would recoil and perhaps, you know, want to have listeners calling in to the FCC with complaints if we use President Trump's words on the air. So it's not surprising that that same that debate is happening in international newsrooms.
Well, I happened to watch the NBC Nightly News last night and heard Lester Holt first give a warning. You know, if you have any small children in the room, you may want to, you know, remove them. But we are going to say the word because it's news. And he went on to say the president, you know, called these countries shithole countries. That was definitely a first.
Look, I feel like if the president of the U.S. is going to plow through norms, that the media should be able to do so without getting a punishment that he wouldn't get.
Right,
and
it's news.
Here we are cowering because we're afraid that, you know, one of his regulatory bodies is going to come after us for saying that.
Right.
That seems absurd to me. If the president says it, it's the news item within a story and it deserves to be repeated. So you have it.
I agree. But it's still weird to hear it on regular over-the-air
very weird
FCC regulated television or radio.
Yeah.
But there you
have it. Well, I'm glad I saw NPR also was sort of on the fence about it. I haven't heard, but they were going to bring their legal team on the air this afternoon and explain why they made the decision to air that language. So it's a you know, again, a moment where the frequency with which I've heard that term uttered in the subways, in the corridor of the UN today, gives me hope that there's a lot of more reasonable people out there who see how absurd what President Trump is doing and are willing to make it the sort of mantra of their day to draw attention to that. So,
yeah, unfortunately.
Anyways, surrounded by like-minded people here in New York.
Yeah, they don't seem to be in our Congress, though, unfortunately. So Luke, what about the Trump statement on how he and Kim Jong-un could be good friends or some nonsense like that? What was that about?
It's been really weird. I mean, so we're sort of ending a week now in which the most successful inter-Korean talks have occurred in 2.5 years.
Right.
And President Trump is taking credit for it at the end, now that it's a proven success, but was quite on the fence about whether to endorse these talks when the outcome wasn't clear, which, you know, sort of fits with his risk tolerance, it seems. And there's a whole weird group of statements that have been coming out of the White House since those talks. I mean, today we heard from the White House, they were praising China for how they've been complying with the sanctions. China's government put out a report today saying, look, we cut exports to North Korea by 80% last month. We cut our imports from North Korea by 25%. Isn't this great? And usually the White House, rightfully, would be quite skeptical of this. I mean, these are official government statistics from China, and they have a vested interest in trying to, you know, puff up their level of compliance with these sanctions. But instead, we heard the White House just basically parrot back a response saying, thank you, guys, you've done so much. This is absolutely what we want. I mean, China is applying maximum pressure in line with the U.S. strategy to change North Korea's behavior. Now we have President Trump taking credit for the talks. We have the South Korean president giving Trump, quote, big credit for the fact that these talks happened, even though I don't think any experts who are in the room of these talks would ever praise President Trump for creating the diplomatic opening that led to this moment. There's a lot of weird stuff happening. And it comes back to me, to this sort of observation that I had earlier this week, which is that it's okay, I think, in the long run, in a normal political environment, if South Korea takes the lead in dealing with North Korea politically. It's a point of pride. It's a point of pride for that government that they have the diplomats, they have the wherewithal and the capacity to be able to lead the talks. And if the U.S. wants to do anything and be on the stage, they can do the military stuff. They can be the ones who have the bombers. They can be the ones that have the jets and do the drills. And the South Koreans, we're going to focus on the diplomacy. And then I thought about that for a second and said, we are not in a normal climate. And I'm imagining these Olympics taking place next month. And President Trump is having his executive time in the morning, the late morning or the early afternoon or the late evening or whenever his executive time is. And he's watching Fox News. And there's a video clip of these North Korean athletes parading out at the opening ceremonies or competing against Americans in the figure skating competition, which is going to happen.
Yeah.
And someone on Fox News, one of their many quote unquote experts on foreign policy, will say South Korea, without consulting the U.S., just invited North Korea to the Olympics. We've been trying to isolate them. President Trump has been trying to apply maximum pressure. And here they were, just opening the door to North Korea to rejoin the international community. And President Trump's going to sit there and realize, oh my God, I've been cut out of this whole process.
Uh-huh.
They started these talks. They are bargaining away the leverage that I think I've accumulated. And he's going to reach for the nearest button on the table, which is this crazy talk we've been hearing from military hawks in recent days about some sort of bloody nose strike against North Korea, where you do some sort of, it's a preposterous, if you kind of think about it, some sort of limited preemptive strike that doesn't cause them to launch an all-out war, but gets them to take us seriously enough that they change their behavior, as if we could possibly understand what that nuance is when it comes to Kim Jong-un. So that all made me nervous. And so I then heard, you know, the president of South Korea come out and start praising President Trump. And I said, this guy's smart.
Yes.
He realizes that the only way to prevent Trump from freaking out is to give him credit for something that it's not even sure he deserves credit for. So it's a weird, weird environment right now between the U.S. and the Koreas in this diplomatic standoff.
Strange times, to be sure. Another big story today, though, it deals with Iran and the Iran deal. Trump is punting it for another month or so. What's going on with this?
He made the right move, it looks like.
Yeah.
You know, a move that most of the Congress wants him to follow suit with, in addition to all of America's allies that helped us negotiate this deal. I mean, I covered a story yesterday where basically every foreign minister from European countries that was at the Iran talks negotiating table said, we've got to keep this deal in place. Even Boris Johnson, whose hair most closely mirrors President Trump, and many have sort of tried to equate these guys, showed off his quite, you know, you can't, I'm not going to say he's like a great diplomat, but he gets it. He gets how serious this is when you start threatening to undo the only agreement we currently have in place in the world, frankly, to stop nuclear proliferation. And he said, look, it's incumbent upon countries that want to shred the Iran deal that they offer a better alternative, because I frankly haven't seen anything that's a good alternative yet. And that was, you know, that's like common sense from Boris Johnson. Now we've seen today that President Trump has every 120 days, he's, you know, required to go and formally say whether he's going to, you know, continue to view Iran to be in compliance with the deal, or he's going to reimpose all the sanctions. And today, despite all the insults that his administration has been lobbying at Iran, and despite all of the pressure that Nikki Haley and others within the administration have been trying to bring to bear to get more sanctions put on Iran, we have continued to stay with the deal, and we're going to do so for the next 4 months. Trump did say, though, this is, quote, the last chance.
Yes. Yes.
So I wonder where we're at right now. I mean, I'm inclined to kind of distrust that and think he probably believes his voters who care most about this don't really understand the nuances of how this deal works, and maybe he can keep punting it down the road. But it does make me nervous, because when he punted this to Congress 4 months ago, they didn't have one hearing to discuss what to do about Iran. It's like we're in an environment where the White House doesn't want to do anything and where the Congress doesn't want to do anything, especially in an election year.
Mm-hmm.
I don't know if Trump, I'm glad he made the decision he made today. And I think a lot of experts are relieved and they maybe hope he does it again. But if he doesn't, I don't know where that puts us, because I just don't think this Congress is going to pick up this issue either. They want the Iran deal much more than he does. But anyways, yes, the Iran deal remains in place for the next 4 months, but it's just on life support, to be sure.
Wow. So at least we can take a breath now on that front anyway. Thank goodness for small favors.
Again, I don't know. They did launch 14 new sanctions on other entities today. I guess Trump has been somewhat successful in convincing European countries to kind of break the Iran deal apart from other elements of Iran's behavior. Mm-hmm. And that makes sense. I mean, Iran is doing a lot of things that are bad, and we don't really have a means to condemn them within the nuclear deal. So, yeah, fine. Sanction Iran for some other stuff. Again, it's sort of like I feel about the North Korea crisis. It makes me nervous.
Gotcha.
Given this president's temperament, that if he feels like he's not in control enough of the options, that he might reach to something more extreme. And for both North Korea and Iran, that alternative is a pretty scary one.
Yes, it is. Luke Vargas from the Talk Media News Service at talkmedianews.com. Always a pleasure, Luke. Thank you so much for your insight.
Thanks, Nicole. Have a good weekend.
Thank you. You too. All right. Well, I promised you, I said earlier that the only way around Donald Trump and the insanity he has brought forth on this nation is to vote him out of office. And the first step in that is changing Congress. Congress, we have, the Republicans in control of both houses of Congress. It is an election year. It is 2018, and we don't have to wait until November. We are in primary season right now, and primary season is a really important time in election years because that's when we can ensure we get the best candidates, the most progressive candidates. That's why you've got to make sure you're registered, not only register in advance, but make sure your registration is valid. Do everything you need to do at a time when the party in power wants to take away your rights. So to help us understand why that might not be as easy as it sounds, I call on, well, our friend Greg Pallas. He's an investigative reporter whose news breaking stories appear on BBC Television, The Guardian, and Rolling Stone magazine. And now Pallas has just released the updated post-election edition of his movie, The Best Democracy Money Can Buy, The Case of the Stolen Election. It's based on his New York Times best-selling books. It's available on Amazon. And I believe we have Greg Pallas on the line. Are you there, Greg?
Yes. Just like Tinkerbell, if you believe, I will be there.
Well, it's always nice to have you there. I wanted to talk with you, first of all, because of a news story that I saw at the beginning of the week that when the Trump administration announced it was dissolving its so-called Commission on Election Integrity. And then I realized that they designed it to make it look like we won something when actually we really didn't. It might even be worse than it was before. We've talked about this commission led by Chris Kobach, the Secretary of State of Kansas. So why don't we, I guess, start there for people who aren't familiar with what this Commission on Election Integrity was all about.
Okay, let's begin here. Chris Kobach of Kansas, if you can't remember that name, just remember KKK.
Okay, yes.
Chris Kobach of Kansas, Secretary of State there. He's running for governor, by the way. He is the Voldemort of vote theft. He is the dark lord that put Trump in power by working with he's the guy who's led all these the vote suppression efforts. And in particular, he's the guy who created a list called CrossCheck. Now, by the way, Kobach's the star of my film, The Best Democracy Money Can Buy. I jump him in the film. He tries to run away from me, but I have the evidence that he stole the election for Trump. And he did it by running campaigns, number one, knock out nearly 1 million voters, almost all of them Hispanic, African-American, Asian-American. That's another new Democratic demographic. He's the guy who said that 3 million people voted twice. That's
right.
Where Donald Trump got that
Unreal.
Idea, okay?
Mm-hmm.
And it's not just, while it's been derided by the mainstream press as just, you know, a stupid lie and ridiculous, it's not funny. I'm not laughing because what the mainstream has left out is that he's used this accusation of people voting twice to knock out a million so-called potential double voters using a purge system called CrossCheck. He's also been the guy behind the claim that there's a million alien voters et cetera. So they have all kinds of ways of attacking voters and attacking the voter rolls, attacking voters of color, and to justify this massive purge, a kind of voting pogrom that they've put together. Trump put Kobach in charge of a voter elections integrity commission with the idea that they were going to prove that there's all these fraudulent voters, so we have to change our voting laws to eliminate voting rights and to start purging voter rolls on a national basis.
Mm-hmm.
There was an outcry that this was like that, and there were several lawsuits brought, including by the one Democratic member of the commission, the Secretary of State of Maine, because they're operating in secret. And there are 11 lawsuits brought by the NAACP, the Democratic member of the commission, et cetera, to open up their records and find out what this group is doing. And in response to the request to open up, Trump simply shut the commission. I just spoke to a lawyer who said that may not prevent the records of that commission being made public anyway. But anyway, he technically shut the commission, but he's moving its work over to Homeland Security because Chris Kobach's idea is that Homeland Security provides some type of invisibility cloak to his machinations. On the other hand, you cannot simply make records invisible by saying that purging Democrats from voter rolls is the same as hunting terrorists, even though I know that Chris Kobach thinks that Democrats, especially black Democrats, are the equivalent of terrorists anyway.
Right.
But so they're trying to hide it in Homeland Security. And I have to say that the Democratic member of his commission said people should be afraid. They shouldn't be applauding, saying, oh, we knocked out the commission. They should be really afraid that the commission's moving into the dark. That's the problem.
It hasn't gotten a whole lot of media attention, or at least nearly as much as I thought it would get. And maybe, I mean, it could be because of the way this official White House statement read. I have it here. The statement they put out says, despite substantial evidence of voter fraud, many states have refused to provide the Presidential Advisory Commission on Election Integrity with basic information relevant to its inquiry. Rather than engage in endless legal battles at taxpayer expense, today I signed an executive order to dissolve the commission and have asked the Department of Homeland Security to review these issues and determine next courses of action. Well, that sounds rather milquetoast compared to what they're actually doing. They're putting this under the auspices of the Department of Homeland Security that can operate outside of public view, right? I mean, they can basically do whatever they want.
Well, they're going to claim that. You know, I mean, I've gotten documents by putting a Freedom of Information request to the Defense Department, to the FBI, and to the Department of Homeland Security. Just because you call something part of an anti-terror fight doesn't mean that you can, like I say, throw a cloak of invisibility around mm-hmm. it. It's not you can't use a magic wand and say, it's Homeland Security. No, purging Democrats has nothing to do with security for our homeland. But they're going to try to use that as a block. So it's with everything else with this administration, everything's a legal battle. And, you know, you've got a mainstream media, which, you know, has the attention and brain size of a flea. And so if the White House issues a statement that, oh, the Kobach Commission shut down, they're saying, oh, look, we got a victory because this stupid commission's shut down. No, it's been moved into the dark,
right,
into Homeland Security. That's not safe. Now, one of the things I'm particularly worried about, here we go, and actually you'll see a little bit of this in the film, this whole idea that there are alien voters, that a million Mexicans swam the Rio Grande uh-huh. just so they can vote for Hillary.
Right.
It's a joke. It's ridiculous. And in our film, we have cartoons of aliens landing from another planet wearing sombreros that say Hillary on them. It's funny, but it isn't, because
right.
Here's specifically what they're doing. Homeland Security, this is Kobach's idea, will use its police powers to get the voter rolls of all 50 states, then compare those voter rolls to the deportation lists. Now, they've done this once before. Florida pulled this trick under Republican hitman Rick Scott, the governor
sure.
there. And your dear governor, I think
yes.
you're familiar with this gentleman.
Yes, I am.
And what they did was is that they took the deportation list, and they'll find a guy named Jose Garcia, mm-hmm. who was deported to Salvador. Then, believe it or not, on the Florida voter rolls, they find a guy named Jose Garcia. Now, he may have a different middle name, a different birthday. It doesn't matter. According to the state, he's potentially the same Jose Garcia who was deported. Now, you might say, well, Jose Garcia is a common name. Well, the answer is not for a Republican. So Florida required thousands of people to go before judges to prove that they were American citizens, almost all of them, of course, just simply people with Hispanic common names. 181,000 people were accused by the state of Florida of being so-called potential alien voters, 181,000 Floridians, and they convicted exactly one of being
wow.
an illegal alien voter, and that was a Republican from Austria, okay?
Uh-huh.
Now, the thing is, Kobach wants to take what Florida did, but Florida's system was shut down. So they had to ultimately put an end to that. But God knows how many Floridians did lose their vote as they were, requiring people to prove their citizenship. Who's going to take off 2 days ago before a court to say I am who I am? The other is they want to take this nationwide, and that's one of the big dangers of putting Kobach's operation into the Department of Homeland Security. But, we'll see. It's going to be a fight. So the idea is to shine the light on. So bless you for having me on to shine the verbal light on it.
Well, anytime. I think it is that important. Look, this is, we say every election year, this is the most important election in our lifetime. This time, I think it really is. I mean, just look where we are today.
Yeah, it may be the last one.
You're
right?
Damn right.
So,
and the media.
Enjoy it while it's there.
Look, I understand it's important to cover the fact that our president is calling African nations and Haiti and El Salvador, shithole nations. But this is what we're turning into as a shithole nation when you can't be assured of a vote. It used, other countries, Australia, voting is mandatory. Other countries do everything they can to make sure people can vote. And it's the exact opposite here, all under the auspices of the Republicans who do not want you to vote. They do not want you to vote if you are likely to vote Democratic.
I just came back from Switzerland, which also voting is also mandatory
wow.
by law. And they, they've best democracy money can buy is a big hit there, but they're horrified. They do not understand a system in which you're telling it's okay. You're getting a slap on the back for figuring out how to stop your opponents from voting or having their votes counted. And, a Swiss company came to me after after Florida 2000, because you had the butterfly ballot, which people couldn't understand, and ended up that was one of the reasons we ended up with George Bush as
yep.
president, because of the way they printed the ballots, and they were there's a probably deliberately, but so the Swiss went asked me to endorse their printed ballot forms, which are multicolor, if you're over 4 years old, you can figure out the ballot, and it's easy.
I'm guessing it's paper, huh?
And so what they said was, would you endorse this ballot? I say, because no one, this is a ballot that you can't make a mistake on. And I said, you don't get it. They don't want to correct the ballots. They don't
right.
want to stop the so-called mistakes. The mistakes are what work in their favor. And in fact, in the state of Florida, the U.S. Civil Rights Commission did a statistical analysis and determined that if your vote gets thrown away for a technical reason, like it wasn't properly marked or something,
mm-hmm.
and in 2000, 179,000 ballots were thrown out as so-called unreadable ballots, that's called spoilage. The chance your ballot will spoil is 900% higher if you're black than if you're white. And that has nothing to do with with education or bright or dumb or anything else. It has to do with who gets the right types of ballots and the right types of machines. That's how that works out. So it is, they want the system to not work. And unfortunately, some Democrats like that too.
Well, of course, when it works to their advantage, that's the problem with some Democrats.
In primaries. You know, Democrats and Republicans tend to purge the same voters, which is poor people, voters of color, students, because in the Democrats' case, the purging and the voting games are done to protect the incumbent leaders of the party. So you end up with both the Republican Party as a whole and Democratic elite kind of hunting down and eliminating the same voters, so that they're hand in hand on some of these on some of this trickery.
Now, Greg Palast, a couple of days ago, you tweeted out a story that also scared the shit out of me. You wrote, "New federal court order greenlights Republican efforts to supercharge voter suppression. For the first time in 35 years, the RNC won't be under a consent decree." What is this about?
Yes, this is really dangerous stuff.
Yeah.
And again, I go back to my movie. If you want to see this, which is, I can say you could, because now on Amazon Prime it's free.
Yes.
So, so go and enjoy it as of this week.
And you can also rent it on Amazon for like $2.99. I think
$3.
Yeah, $3.
Yeah, $2.99.
It's definitely worth the watch.
It's out there and cheap. But you'll see a section with voting rights attorney Bobby Kennedy, and this and Floridians again will be very interested in this one. There's a trick called caging that the Republican Party used in Florida and in Wisconsin and other states in various elections, where they send letters out to voters and first class or sometimes registered. And when the letter comes back as undeliverable, they challenge that voter's right to vote because they say, oh, well, that, you know, it's a fake address, that's a ghost voter. And you say, well, yeah, that's we don't want ghost voters. But think about it. Where are they sending the letters? In Florida, they were sending the Republican Party was sending letters to black students in the summer at traditionally black colleges in the summer when they're legal voters, but they've shut down their mailboxes for the summer, which they're allowed to do. They're sending to elderly Jews in Miami in Jewish precincts. I kid you not. You know, they're going after the elderly of Zion. During the winter, when a lot of the snowbirds go back north for a few months, and they're legal voters. And once again, their vote gets challenged. And here's the tragedy. I have thousands of names of soldiers, like at the Jacksonville Air Station, a naval air station, who were sent letters by the Republican Party to their voting addresses. The letters came back undeliverable, and because they say do not forward, because those guys were overseas in Iraq, Afghanistan, Germany. And so, in other words, go to Iraq, lose your vote, mission accomplished. That's what the Republicans were doing. And now they're under a 30-year-old consent decree that they wouldn't do this. And a judge has just relieved them, has just terminated the consent decree. Now the truth is that caging should be and is against the law if it has a racial bias in it. And if you deliberately know that you are taking away someone's voting rights, who you know, like a soldier away from, you know, their voting address, who has the right to vote, of course. But, you know, but there was a specific consent decree that they had to follow. So they were violating that, but without the consent decree, I think it's just going to be a steamroll. You're going to see caging going on a mass basis nationwide in 2018.
Wow. Now, a case about this just came before the Supreme Court this week, I believe. In Ohio, there was
a new one. A new one in Ohio. Now, again, in the film, we talk about cross-check. There are a lot of, see, because one way cross-check works, that's this Greg Palast, if you just tuned in, that's a system that Chris Kobach and Donald Trump, who said that there were millions of double voters, they have lists of double voters. I have that list. In fact, I'm the only journalist that has the list. I have about over a million of their names. And it's people like, and I kid you not, James Brown. They say James Brown in Georgia. There are 538 guys named James Brown in Georgia. they said these are all double voters because their name, because they found a James Brown in Detroit and a James Brown in Maryland and James Brown in Virginia. Now, their middle names were different. Their ages were different. Doesn't matter. They said these are potential double voters, and a lot of them lost their vote. But it's usually done in two stages. Here's where Ohio comes in. Ohio didn't just remove everyone named James Brown from their voter rolls. Ohio listed them all as inactive voters. Now, these are people who have been voting for years, but they were listed as inactive. If they then miss one federal election, like they skipped the last midterms or something.
Right.
And by the way, in a lot of African-American areas, you have basically congressional candidates who are unopposed. It's very common. So they don't vote because why vote when the candidate's unopposed? But then what they don't realize, they've just lost their vote. They've just been purged from the voter rolls because they were inactive, then they missed the congressional race. Now when they go to vote for president, they're going to find their names missing. This is what was in front of the Supreme Court. But the Supreme Court is, you know, the Supreme Court is now basically, you know, I don't know why they're wearing black robes instead of white sheets, at least the majority Republican five.
Yep.
But it's really become the last bastion holdout of Jim Crow. And so I don't have any faith that the court is going to protect the voters of Ohio. And the guy running this this purge system in Ohio, John Houston, is one of the most vicious, vicious partisan. He makes Catherine Harris look like Thomas Jefferson with lipstick, you know. So I fear what's going on in Ohio. Again, Trump didn't win that state. Vote suppression won that state.
Wow.
And that's what made Trump president.
So, Greg Palast, do you have any hope that 2018, all accounts say there's going to be a Democratic wave. There should be. I think the votes will be there. The Republicans will do everything they can to keep people who are going to vote for Democrats from voting. Do you think there'll be enough people to overcome the voter caging and voter purging and all the other nefarious practices they're going to put in place to keep us from voting?
I think the operative word there is, can you overcome, you know?
Right.
Martin Luther King led people over the bridge at Selma singing, "We shall overcome."
Yes, he did.
It wasn't, "We can overcome if they weren't giving us such a hassle over voting." You know, maybe we could overcome if they didn't use all these terrible tactics. It's, "We shall overcome."
That's right.
But you don't do that. As King said, the enemy of justice is not injustice. The enemy of justice is complacency. You have got to vote. You have got to register. And I'm going to tell you something else. And this is what happened in Ohio. You know, 500,000 people lost their vote before the 2016 election. And that could have been prevented if people did something simple. Protect your vote to begin with, which is go online. Every state now has voter registration online. Check your registration. You'd be stunned to find that you've been voting 20 years in the same place and your name is gone. I can tell you someone who did that. Greg Palast. I went online. I was trying to show people on a broadcast how you check. You just go on to your state Secretary of State's office and look for voter registration to confirm your registration. And I used my own example, and it said, "Voter not found," here in California.
Wow.
So it was simple. Then I re-registered online, and I'd strongly recommend registering online, not on paper, because about 40% of the people who register on pieces of paper, on those yellow little forms, motor voter forms, never get registered.
Wow.
That's the other thing. If you think you just registered, you better check online to make sure that you are registered. This is like simple, you know, voter hygiene, you know, like, in fact, I have in my book, The Best Democracy Money Can Buy, the new edition, at the back of it, it has 7 ways to protect your ballot. Think of it as a ballot condom, you know. And number one is check your registration and re-register if they have your name wrong, your address wrong, or you're not there for some reason.
Like, and do it regularly. I mean, just because you're registered today doesn't mean a month from now your name might somehow be missing. And
generally check about 3 months before an election.
Okay.
So that you have, you don't want to check the day before because it may be too late to re-register.
Sure.
And you know, they're pulling out every trick in the book, but that doesn't mean that you can't overwhelm them. And that's what happened in 2012. Bobby Kennedy and I calculated when we were writing for Rolling Stone that about 5.9 million votes were stolen by stopping people from voting, throwing away their votes, giving people provisional ballots which don't get counted, all that stuff. And Obama simply overwhelmed the 5.9 million vote steal.
Right.
He just overwhelmed it. And so, yes, so you're talking about a Democratic wave. It's got to be a big one. I mean, I'm not supporting the Democrats. I am supporting people's votes getting counted. And so if you want your vote to count, you better do something to make sure it does get counted. Plus, fight these tricks. And don't believe the hype. You know, if they play a game, we're so used to Trump being, you know, he's the twittiest. So you can make fun of him, and he's a joke, and but he can be scary. But remember, he's not running the show. It's the billionaires behind him. And guys like Chris Kobach. Kobach has his law degrees from Yale, Harvard, and Oxford.
Wow.
You know, you can laugh at Trump, but the guys who are really running the show, they know what they're doing. They are sharp. They're brainy. They're dangerous. So don't assume that you're just dealing with a fool with some just, you know, gelatinous pile of narcissistic psychosis.
No,
that's just the front man,
right? And he's unfortunately he's what we wound up with. But the people behind him are pulling all the strings. So and they're the ones that don't want your votes to count. So again, you say check your registration for like 3 months before election, and I'm talking about this whole year is primary season. And primaries don't get enough attention, I think. And they're really important because it's when you make sure the candidate you want can get in, not necessarily the candidate the party is pushing, but the one you want.
And there's something else. Yeah. And don't miss the midterm election, because understand the way that they're playing games now with this inactive voter trick is that if you miss the congressional election, you may find that you don't have a vote when it comes to voting for president. So you got to show up at the midterm. And again, primaries are important, as we've now found out. You know, if you don't have the candidate that can win, or if you don't have the candidate that you want, and there's no enthusiasm, that's deadly. So yeah, absolutely, primaries are incredibly important. I mean, look, it's no big deal. You know, you brush your teeth. You know, this is voting hygiene. This is democracy hygiene, and you'll really miss it when she's gone.
Oh yes,
you know,
right, and especially now when we're all—I know Trump can be humorous. For me, it's more the source of agita. My stomach is in knots, and I'm not handling the Trump presidency very well. And I know a lot of listeners aren't either. The best defense that we have against him for the next couple of years, anyway, is in Congress. And any chance to change the leadership in the House of Representatives and or the Senate, we need to take. And so the only way to do that is at the ballot box. And the only way for that to work is if your vote counts. And the only way your vote's going to count is if you make sure that you're registered.
You know, people who think their vote doesn't count. The state of Virginia, control of the entire Virginia legislature was decided last week.
Yep.
By one vote, and that one vote would decide where that ballot would be counted, was determined by a coin toss. One single vote determined the entire control of the Virginia legislature, that important key state. One vote.
That's
so if you think your one vote doesn't count, well, look at Virginia. I mean, the impact of that disaster, the Democrats losing control of the Virginia legislature by one vote.
Yep. Yep.
You got to now say, you are responsible. You are responsible.
Greg Palast, the best democracy money can buy, the case of the stolen election. The new updated version is just out on Amazon. It's free to watch if you have Amazon Prime. You can rent it for $2.99. You can buy it for just a couple bucks more. It is must-watching material. Greg Palast, it is always a pleasure. Thank you so much for the work you do and for always being available to join us. I so appreciate your work.
Thanks a lot, Nicole. Bye.
Bye-bye. All right, and that's going to do it for us for a Friday. It's Friday. Have a wonderful weekend, and we'll see you back here on Tuesday.